Colin Russo and Mike Rizzo live here at the Marriott with Lou Grosser's Award are going to be tonight. We're going to honor some of the top collegiate kickers in college football, some of the top high school kickers in the Palm Beach County area. That's all up to coming here. We got the fifth quarter presented by Hard Rock Bet from 6 to 7 p.m. today, where we'll have the aforementioned kickers all join us. We'll talk a little bit, have a good time with them. Should be a good time on that front. Go start your day with a win over at F45 West Palm Beach. It's a functional style of working out. It's 45-minute classes in and out in the morning or in the afternoon. You choose when you go, and it's great because you get two coaches on site. You get all the workouts on the screen in front of you, so you just follow along on what they're doing. And it's high-intensity interval training. It's made to get a sweat. You're made to feel mobile after. You're made to kind of increase your flexibility and, more importantly, increase your strength and cardiovascular ability. That's all at F45. You want to train for something like High Rocks, it caters to that. If you want to train just to get in better shape, that's exactly what F45, the people there, that's exactly what they were looking for. Check it out today. Check out the downtown West Palm Beach location on Instagram. That's F45 downtown West Palm Beach. Or find a studio near you online at F45. Christian Catt is our producer behind the glass at the City Place Studios. It's the 5 p.m. hour presented by Good Greek Moving and Storage. Christian, welcome in. How are you today? What's going on?
Doing fantastic. Got to watch the most football I have been able to in quite some time now, just with a lack of other work getting in the way. It was a good time.
And who were you rooting for over the weekend? Let me get this out of the way. Were you rooting for Duke to beat Virginia?
Yes, I was.
And were you rooting for Texas Tech to beat BYU?
Yes, I was.
Were you rooting for Alabama to lose?
No, I was rooting for Alabama to win.
You wanted Alabama to win.
Okay. More so, actually, just skinning the game there, honestly.
I do.
Yeah, I just had a couple picks with Alabama in some pools and whatnot. Didn't really mind the results of the SEC championship. Would have liked to see a good game. That's pretty much it outside of my actual skin of the game.
All right, and Indiana, were you rooting for Indiana to beat Ohio State? Let's get this out of the way.
I was jumping for joy. Like, you would have thought that I was in the movie Hoosiers the way that I was rooting for Indiana in that game. I'm a Penn State alum, Penn State fan, so a lot of my friends are also Penn State alum, Penn State fans. And some of them were like, that should be us up there. See, that's annoying. That's awful. If anyone should unseat Ohio State, it should have been us. And I'm thinking, no. You enjoy the Ohio State losses. Whichever way they come, enjoy it, because it doesn't happen that often. You know, every once in a while we'll get it and you'll see Urban Meyer sad eating Papa John's in the back. Like, you enjoy the Ohio State losses. You do not complain of how they get there. You enjoy the Ohio State losses when they should be beating Michigan. We hate Michigan as Penn State fans. A lot of people hate Michigan, but you enjoy when they beat Ohio State when they shouldn't. So I was so happy watching Fernando Mendoza do what he did.
You happy about it, Mike?
How
do you feel about that game?
I a lot of mixed emotions. I figured it was going to be in the 5-5, but regardless, Chris, let's do this now. Listen, Indiana deserved the game. Cignetti deserved the game. And listen, the drive Mendoza had, the touchdown drive and that third down play call with 2 minutes left, unbelievable. Heisman moment. If you're not voting him for the Heisman Trophy, I question you.
Yeah. I was going to say, this feels like a game that if we treat this as one portion of a five-topic segment, we would be minimizing how much these conference championships matter. And yep. I think that it does its own service to talk about it as its own big thing, because that's a big freaking deal that Indiana won the Big Ten.
It is. And boys, my brother, who is the stepchild who can't stand Ohio State being from Ohio, we don't know what happened. He fell on his head. He kept on, you know, he had a couple of drinks. He was visiting our buddy Matt in Scottsdale, Arizona. And he kept texting me, "You lost to Indiana in football." And I kept telling him, like, Joe, Indiana isn't the Indiana that you used to know.
Oh,
like,
now, hold on. Now we're saying that.
This happened in the office earlier today.
Wow.
But listen, at the same time, if anything, it was humbling for me. I thought Ohio State was clearly the best team in the country. They were cleared of Indiana. They were cleared of Georgia. And they were cleared of all the other teams that could compete. All right? I was dead wrong there. There's issues in the interior of the offensive line, and the quarterback looked like a freshman for the first time all year.
The offense period is strange. It's erratic. That's the one. If there's a weak link with Ohio State, there's nothing wrong with the defense. You saw it throughout the game. Indiana cannot chain move this defense. They're not driving down the field getting seven first downs.
No.
They need chunk play. And that's what I commend Indiana for doing in the game. They actually realized, all right, we're not going to kind of beat down on this defense and go three plays first down, three plays first. We're not going to do that. What we need to do is look for one-on-one coverage, trust, and they have three good receivers. Trust one of our good receivers, and one of them didn't even play, Omar Cooper. Trust one of them to make a play to get a chunk play off the board. That's exactly what they did. Yeah. That's why I give them credit. That's exactly why they won the game.
Agreed. And Jermaine Matthews, who I think is one of the best corners in the country, he couldn't have played better defense, Christian, on that touchdown catch. Okay, it was unbelievable defense. And he was one-on-one in the slot on that third and six. He played unbelievable defense there. It was an unbelievable catch and throw. That's why you give credit to Mendoza. He stepped up in a big moment, and he had his Heisman moment. He's got my Heisman Trophy vote. With that said, boys, okay, with all that great stuff said to Indiana, Ohio State beat themselves. The red zone trips were embarrassing. The fourth and one play call was embarrassing.
Both fourth and one play calls, not going for it. You don't need to do a QB sneak. You definitely don't need to kick it when you're driving down the field 7 minutes.
Agreed.
15 plays. We're here. Let's go. Yep. You're fourth and one. Trust your running back who has been carving them to pieces.
Agreed.
Give the ball to him. If you don't want to give it to Zayn, give it to him. Don't kick the field goal.
And listen, it's like, that's why, as a Buckeye man, I feel fine about going into the playoff. Now, Miami or A&M is going to be a tough game, and you got Georgia, who I think Georgia's stride for stride after watching that SEC championship right there with Ohio State. So, boys, it was humbling. If anything, it was good. And I don't know what the hell that 13-10 score is. It's the same thing against Michigan last year, and now the same thing against Indiana. But if I could look at this without blinders and not getting angry for not winning the Big Ten championship for the sixth year in a row, it's you played your worst game. The offense did everything possible in order to lose that game, and the defense only gave up 13 points.
Yeah, you have questions about the offense. Out of that game, you have questions about the offense.
Interior offensive line, and when you play a great defensive line like Indiana, you're going to see some great defensive lines in the playoffs, and the quarterback looked like a freshman for the first time all year.
I would have threw it deep three times a drive.
Agreed.
I mean, Jeremiah Smith is a freak of a physical player, and they gave him two chances, and he converted. And you give him three, including the Hail Mary at the end, and he converted three of them. Do twice a drive. Give a shot deep.
Tate, first-round wide receiver, one target in the second half. I also think – let me make a couple excuses real quick. And they didn't do this, and I'm happy they didn't do it.
It's not beating themselves, though. This is Indiana having a good game plan and Ohio State.
Correct, but no, other excuses. We need to fix the calendar because – the Hartline leaving, I think, was a big thing. Did it look like that guy was going to go take a head coaching job in that game the plays he was calling?
He was on Zillow.
I mean, jeez. The play calling in that game.
Looking for a house in St. Pete.
My big cousin of mine, Scotty, was at the game. Scotty's like, Mike, is this guy at South Florida already? No idea, Scotty. Number two, you're dealing with National Signing Day and all the drama with Chris Henry and that garbage legend Bay and dealing with a Big Ten championship. We got to fix the calendar. There's a lot going on at the Woody this past week. All right? No excuses, and I'm happy Day didn't bring it up, but jeez, it's a lot of stuff happening.
Good for Indiana.
All unique to Ohio State, too.
And the thing about Indiana that was interesting was last year when they played this game, and last year when Indiana played great teams, it was clear that they were a step behind, not in the skill positions, not even a really quarterback, but on the trenches. Defensive and offensive lines were outmatched when they played Notre Dame and when they played Ohio State. When they circled back around this year, you didn't get that sense. You actually got the sense that the front sevens on either side actually matched up pretty well. It was clear that was a big deal to Cignetti in the offseason, and they wanted to get those guys bigger, stronger, faster, and that made a difference in the game. They were not afraid in the front.
Guys, tell me if it's Ohio State Mike talking. Miserable hold. Can I get a hold? Yeah, can I get a hold on Kenyatta Jackson four different times on third downs?
Mike, if we had a penny every time somebody held somebody in the front seven, secondary is one thing, but in the front seven, if we had a penny for every time somebody was held, look at the Bear game yesterday. If you watch how they blocked Micah Parsons throughout the game, they still won, but that's just what happens, especially when you got good defensive
players. And then I thought the referees lost control on that sack. They called it a sack, then they didn't call it a sack. I thought the officiating was garbage all game, both ways. There are holdings on Indiana that didn't get called, but I saw more. And like I said, I don't even know if it's Ohio State. Mike talking, I said more. I saw way more. I saw four different instances when first round pick Kenyatta Jackson was coming around the edge. I did. I got very upset about that call.
If you call holding every play, I mean, when it happens every single play, the referees are going to have to let them play a little bit. I understand your point. I understand the complaint. Here's the bottom line. Ohio State has to do a little soul searching offensively on what type of offensive team they wanted to be. They had a couple got to have it drives. They couldn't really do much out of it. They had that one drive where they had a chance at 4th-and-1, and kicking the field goal is a loser mentality, and that's why the ball gods told them this is going wide left.
And I told Christian when I saw him today, I said, once you commit to going for it on 4th-and-1 early on, you got to do it the rest of the game. You can't – and listen, Jay Fielding, did you see the video of him hitting the friggin' post before the game? Brother, let's focus on kicking it up the uprights, okay? It's just a lot of emotions, guys. I wanted that for the team for the first time since 2020. Christian, selfishly, I wanted to be the first team to go 16-0.
Better
as
for the
well.
Playoffs. Now, better for the playoffs this way.
Now Indiana has that great opportunity. Listen, how about this? If Indiana wins it all, 16-0, Cignetti? Is he the best coach in college football?
I'm glad you asked.
I mean, geez.
Because that will be kick off the 5-5.
Five topics.
High five.
5 o'clock.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere. Let's get out of here.
Endless takes.
You can't handle the truth.
All gas, no brakes.
And it's shaking big time.
It's time for the 5 at 5.
Hold on to your butts.
Presented by Flagler Credit Union, proud supporter of FAU Athletics. Number one.
Yeah, the Hoosiers of Indiana beat Ohio State in Indianapolis for the Big Ten Championship on Saturday night, 13-10. When Kurt Cignetti entered Bloomington, Indiana. Indiana had the all-time lowest winning percentage in college football history. Less than 2 years later, Indiana is the number one team in the nation going into the college football playoff. Let's flash back 2 years ago when Kurt Cignetti was welcoming himself in Bloomington and introducing himself to the fans. Probably couldn't hear because of the ravaging fans, but he said, Purdue sucks and so does Michigan and Ohio State. Is Kurt Cignetti the most desirable coach in college football right now?
He's the perfect coach if you're trying to turn something around. He is right now, in terms of you don't know about consistency, you don't know enough about a big game scenario to really give him any sort of in-game coaching accolade like that. But if you needed to turn something around and you wanted things to go from 0 to 100 quickly, there is no doubt that he is the best man for the job.
I got in some heated arguments yesterday with non-Ohio State friends because they asked me the question, if Cignetti goes 16-0 and wins the national championship, is he the best coach in college football? And I said Ryan Day, and I argued it. I kept going. I said, listen, the consistency that Day has been able to do at Ohio State, and then my buddies will rebuttal, Christian, oh, it's Ohio State. The ship drives itself. Has the ship driven itself for Alabama the last 2 years under Kalen DeBoer? Has the ship driven itself over at Michigan when Jim Harbaugh left? I think there's something to be said about consistency, but Christian, they might be onto something. If that guy goes 16-0 in Indiana and wins the national championship, how do you not say that's one of the best seasons in college football history?
Contextually, it's one of the best.
And also, Christian, heading into that Ohio State-Indiana game, Ohio State beat Indiana more than any team has beaten any team in college football history. The Buckeyes have beaten Indiana more than any team has beaten any team in college football history. They wanted that.
It's contextual. And one thing I did see about the current formulation of the roster, they have 7 4 stars and the rest are 3 stars. They have like 56 3
stars. That's the argument. My buddy Pat kept arguing, they have the 70th best roster composite. And that's when I got hot and heavy. I said, you didn't watch that game and think they had the 70th best
roster. That's why I never get too far into the stars and stuff like that.
Stat geeking. Enough.
Look at Indiana. They had 7 4 stars in the roster and the rest are 3 stars. What does that tell you? There are other teams in the Big Ten that they beat head-to-head. What do you think Oregon has in terms of stars? They beat them head-to-head in Oregon.
Christian, I love a 5-star. Oh, I love
that's
breaking
why
down.
You're the wrong person to say
Christian,
this.
Oh, Christian, I love breaking down the
it
new 5-star heading to Columbus,
it
brother.
Means
I am a sucker for that.
Absolutely nothing.
I am
and
a sucker
no
for that.
Look no further than Indiana.
Sucker for a 5-star.
Look no further than Indiana. It means absolutely nothing. When you get the right guy involved, it means absolutely nothing.
To put a bow on this. Number two. Quickly, to put a bow on this. I have concerns now. I'm no longer, hee-haw, hee-haw, Ohio State's the best. No longer that. There are questions, and I'm a little worried going into the playoff. Let's line it up one more time. I would love to see Ohio State and Indiana round two in the national championship.
Who's the best team in football right now?
It's probably Indiana, Georgia, Ohio State. I know they put Ohio State over Georgia, but what Georgia did in that SEC championship and how good Gunnar Stockton has looked, that defense is starting to come along as well. I'd probably go Indiana, Georgia, and then Ohio State. And
I think Tech deserves some hype too. Tech has blown out everybody. Texas Tech has blown out absolutely. Maybe it's Big 12. Who knows? Now it's time to find out. They absolutely deserve that top four. I actually think they're going to be a threat. That Denver versus Oregon is a good litmus test because Oregon's not the top of the line, but if they're able to beat Oregon, and especially beat Oregon with a little bit of stamp of approval on it, then we're going to have to be – that's one where I wouldn't be surprised 3 weeks from now if we're talking about Texas
Christian,
Tech.
I got humbled, brother. I got humbled, and I'm going to trust Coach Day like I didn't last year. I didn't trust Day last year. They won the national championship. I'm going to decide to trust my coach this year.
Number three.
Well, the champions crowned over the weekend weren't just on the football field. They happened on the soccer pitch as well. Take it away, Ken Lavica on ESPN 106.3.
Alba sweeps the ball into the attacking half for Inter Miami. Chested by Messi. Oh, what a beautiful ball, Allende. Into the box. Allende! He scores from the top of the box. Sliding by Takahoka. Inter Miami is going to win the MLS Cup on Tadeo Allende's record-setting ninth goal of the MLS Cup playoff. It is chaos in South Florida. It is a championship celebration kicking off in South Florida. Inter Miami fans, your club has won the Major League Soccer Championship.
Man, those scenes are ridiculous. I'm looking at them right now. The pink smoke, no pun intended, just flying throughout the crowd there at Chase Stadium. How big is this, Mike?
Big. Big time. I mean, to have this right in our backyard, Christian, here in South Florida, I know the world football fan knows exactly how big Lionel Messi is, but I don't think the average listener that listens to our station realizes how big of a star Messi truly is. That guy can't go anywhere in the world without getting recognized. He's the most one of the most recognizable athletes in the world, and he plays in your backyard, and he just won a championship. They're building a beautiful new stadium in Miami, and I can't wait to continue to be a part of it. Truly fascinating stuff for Messi. Truly fascinating stuff for his family. It was cool to see his family there, too. They got to be. And, Christian, the reason I bring his family up, all the kids were young when he was in Spain and Barcelona when he was winning those trophies. They're going to remember this, and they're going to remember Dad as being arguably the best soccer player to ever play the game.
Max Pretos, who joined us on Friday, who does Apple TV coverage, for the MLS. He joined us and he was gung-ho on Vancouver winning that game.
He was.
And he was gung-ho on England winning on our home turf. He's dead wrong.
Max can handle it, so I'm gonna call it. He was a phony for that.
Total.
And Max, if you're listening, I know you're laughing at that. But Max, you're a phony for coming on here on the Inter Miami Radio Network and saying Vancouver was going to win convincingly and that England, who never wins on this side of the continent, was going to win the World Cup on United States soil. I agree with my friend Colin.
Number four.
Let's go to the NFL, where we had one half of the division championship game take place in Green Bay, Wisconsin. In the NFC North, of course, the Packers beat the Bears 28-21. What was your main takeaway from that matchup at Lambeau?
First of all, the Bears did not need that game. They did not need that game. That game, that division will be decided not only in the games they still have yet to be played, but that game in Soldier Field at the end of the year, or in 2 weeks. Next Saturday is when they play again. They play quickly. And more importantly, the Bears did absolutely nothing in the first half, especially passing the football. They couldn't get anything going. And you got to give Caleb Williams and that offense credit, because not only were they able to kind of wake up in the second half, that final drive, When Packers just scored, they went 65 yards in 7 plays. Josh Jacobs tore them apart to do the go-ahead touchdown, 28-21. Caleb took him right down the field.
He did.
Took him right down the field, and he was making some pretty wild plays. I was very impressed, all things considered, with Chicago. The officiating had some moments, but ultimately, the Bears, they showed a lot of guts. That was an impossible game to win in that situation.
Logistically, Colin is correct. They didn't need the game. But talking to Bear fans is, you know, Christian, working in Illinois for the, yeah, that's all of them told me. They go, Riz, that was the game to turn the tide. I reminded them that they play him again. You know, you play him again
next Saturday.
You play him again. You're going to have a chance. But they're like, Riz, it could have turned the tide. I don't want to hear all that. The Bears are 9-4.
Yeah, it's about the little brother mentality that the Bears
have. That too. But also, like, you know, we mentioned our good buddy Ben Brust.
Brust.
At ESPN Milwaukee. And, you know, the high and mightiness of the Packer fan, whatever. God, I was rooting for the Bears. Sorry. 21-21. I had a good feeling 21-20. Sorry, 21-21.
Caleb Williams is so good with his legs. Like, he is a top five scrambling quarterback in the NFL.
Well, you see.
Yeah, he's not great at throwing on the run because he fires it at 500 miles an hour, but he is great. Talking about pocket presence, getting out of way, knowing when to scramble. He's a little early. And the one thing about it is it was a fun game to watch because they had Brady on it. And Brady, every time he does something wrong, Brady will air it out.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a very good kind of game for Brady to have because you're constantly micro-judging either side at the quarterback position. But I was impressed with Williams yesterday, even after a terrible first half.
Christian, you're starting to see why people were calling him the generational talent and no doubt number one overall pick. You got to get good coaching in there.
And he's a good player.
Ben Johnson's a hell of a coach. Quickly, boys, Jordan Love, you're starting to see some consistency there. I know he threw the pick, but
that three-touch pick was awful.
It was awful. One of the worst picks you'll see all year. Turn it around, 233, three touchdowns. If the Packers get that, guys, they could go deep in the playoffs. I think people, they got it all wrong, I think, when it comes to the Packers. I think that the whole playoff run is riding on their quarterback, in my honest opinion.
Yeah, their defense is really good, and offensively they get a lot of pieces, and Christian Watson has played outstanding.
Dude, deep ball threat.
They just got Jaden Reed back, so they're now getting healthy. And they used Josh Jacobs just enough for it to work. I was impressed with both sides there. It was a good game. It was a well-played game.
Number five.
Let's go back to college football, where Notre Dame, mere hours after they were left out of the 12-team college football playoff, said, you know what? We're not going to play any bowl games whatsoever. Give me one word to describe that move from Notre Dame.
Yeah, it's a little elitist. That's what it is. It's elitist. We're too big to play against Georgia Tech in a bowl game. We're too good to play against this team, that team. It's Notre Dame, and you're not. It's a little elitist.
Now, Christian, this might not necessarily be a word, but
comfortable listening for me. Thank you.
It sounds like that's Kevin Notre Dame in the office.
That's the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. Christian, I got my cup right underneath Marcus Freeman, and I'm going to be drinking the tears. And by the way, Freeman's a Buckeye. Shame on him for the defeatist mentality of we're not showing
might not
up to
be
the
totally
bowl
his,
game.
That might not totally. That might not totally be his decision.
Shame on a former Buckeye man. We don't do that, Christian. Buckeye men don't do that.
He might not
shame
make
on him.
They do now.
He might not make that decision.
But Christian, wham. Cry me a river. They're a disgrace. You hit the nail on the head. The holier-than-thou crap. I mean, jeez. Go cry a river and go home. I don't want to see you next year either.
I hate Notre Dame. I love seeing this. And I got no sympathy for them. And I got no I don't even hate them. Because this is what they've always been. I've seen this in Notre Dame. I know this. I have someone who went to Notre Dame in my family. You go there. They all go to church before the game. They walk down the stupid stone path, and they wait for the team to walk into the stadium. It's a waste of time. There's a special tree
that they got
to take a look at. It's a waste of time.
For the record, Colin and I are Catholics. We love our Lord and Savior, Jesus
Christ.
I'm a big fan
of the church. It doesn't need to cost $100,000 to go see the church. I agree.
But I don't want this act like we're bashing our own religion. It's got a time and a place.
It's not about Catholicism. I don't need to spend
$75,000
a semester. There's no price on Jesus Christ.
Christian, I told you why I can't stand Notre Dame, all right? Wait, we're from Ohio, damn it.
There is no tuition money. That makes you more Catholic than me.
Christian, CYO football on Saturdays. We want to know the Buckeye score, Sister Rita. We don't want to know the Notre Dame score. Tell us the Ohio State score, not the Notre Dame score. We're in Ohio.
That was the 5-5 presented by Flagler Credit Union. We'll take a timeout here. It's Russo and Rizzo on ESPN 106.3. I'm only human, y'all.
Let's get back to the Anajar and Levine Accident Attorney Studios. This is Russo and Rizzo on ESPN 106.3.
Russo and Rizzo on ESPN 106.3 with Colin Russo and Mike Rizzo alongside me. We've got Christian Catt back at the City Play Studios in downtown West Palm Beach. We're streaming live on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter /X at ESPN West Palm. Joined now by the executive director of the Bush's Boca Raton Bowl of Beans. Brand new name this year. First year of Bush's Beans getting into the fold here. Mike and I are going to be diving into a pool of beans on game day. So stay tuned for that December 23rd, 2 p.m. at Flagler Credit Union Stadium. And, Doug, we actually know who's going to be playing in the game now.
We do. But I got a piece of business I got to do with you first.
All right, go ahead. What do you got?
Remember last time I talked with you guys, the day we announced the title sponsorship and everything? And just by slip of the tongue, what did I say to you? There's a can of beans out there with your name on it.
Doggies!
Cans of beans.
Oh, my gosh. Rizzo and look
with
at this.
Your names
Doggie.
On them.
Look at that.
Look at this, Dougie.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my God. Rizzo yes. Can of beans
Hang
as
on,
well.
There we go.
Doug, are you kidding me?
Dougie Fresh.
So we're looking on the YouTube live stream. We got
this?
A Bush's Boca Raton Bowl of beans. And it says Russo and Rizzo, and one for Russo, one for Rizzo. How
Unbelievable.
About that?
Unbelievable.
And it has, the Boca Bowl logo right there. And it's right here. Wow. Look at this.
This is awesome, Doug.
But you can't open them up for the beans because there's none in them.
Wow. All right,
big thanks, Dougie,
thank
Amy
you
Boland,
so much.
Who's the brand manager.
Now we
got to jump in.
Now we got to
If there's a dunk tank full of beans, we got to
Correct.
There you go.
Correct. Doug, if it's the barbecue style, I might eat my way out.
I'm there with you.
All right, Doug, so we know who our teams are going to be now. Take it away.
You know, we got Louisville late. We knew we were going to get Toledo, and then there was all that shuffling and everything. And, of course, you know, I think crossed all the bowls, we kind of figured there was going to be at least one. And so when Kansas State went out, not a huge surprise. Iowa State followed them. The big surprise was Notre Dame. And, you know, I don't want to speak – for, against, whatever, they made that choice, and then everything toppled. So
really?
Then we had to go start fishing through the 5s and 7s. You're supposed to go by APR, academic progress rate. But, you know, some of these have been done for 2 weeks. They've sent their kids off. They haven't practiced since their last game. So, you know, I can understand why some of them said, hey, we can't do it. Our kids are all gone. So, As we went down through the process, and we were even, because we had a good, pretty good inside knowledge, we were going to get an ACC team. So we kind of go down through the list. We're counting them off. It's like, who's still in? And I see Louisville there. And Louisville, I mean, Lamar Jackson went to Louisville from Boynton Beach High, won a Heisman Trophy. Ashton Gelati, defensive lineman from Boca High, he played at Louisville. Both those guys are in the NFL right now. Plus a lot of other guys from all other places.
Yep,
so what a program, and what a coach, too, Coach Brohm.
And, Dougie, this is a team that beat Miami, who is in the college football playoff. I mean, this is a high-level ACC team we're about to see in Boca Raton.
They beat two college football playoff teams. They beat Miami at Miami. They're the only team in the country that beat James Madison.
Yeah, it was the lone Power Four game that James Madison actually played.
Yep.
They beat them by 14, I believe, in that game.
Yeah.
And now, Doug, for somebody who doesn't know, people listening, you're the executive director of a bowl game right here in South Florida, the Bush's Boca Raton Bowl of Beans. All right, last week, what does that look like for you in terms of, all right, figuring it out? Do you have a hand in deciding who gets where? Do you make calls yourself? How does the executive director of a bowl game eventually get to the point, all right, Louisville, Toledo, December 23rd. Walk us through that process.
So, you know, we're part of the ESPN Events Bowl Games, owned and operated by ESPN. We work through our folks, our division offices in Charlotte. My boss is up there. I mean, a long time ago, I let him know, here's what I'd like to have. And, you know, it really went all the way back to when we were doing the date, because that's real key.
A little bit of a wish list in a way.
Told him, you know, the last couple of years, we were when school was still here in the county, a lot of families, kids couldn't come out. So it's a matter of getting the right date, and the 23rd was just perfect because it allows the team to get back in time, you know, for Christmas. They get all their kids back home, but yet they don't have to practice through and after Christmas, which is, you know, sometimes kind of a bummer. So we were thrilled to get them. The Toledo thing came, you know, Toledo's been here twice. They played well both times, won both times.
And it comes from ESPN.
Yes. Well, and we work it back together.
In some way.
But see, they're trying to place for all of our bowl games.
Right.
So there's a lot of shuffling back and forth. We all saw what happened with Birmingham Bowl. You know, they had a couple things fall through because of teams that decided not to play. So, you know, when as I'm looking at that ACC list dwindling down, and I'm seeing Louisville still there, and I'm like, man, that would be a great one to get. And, you know, I mean, they were ranked as high as, I believe, 14th in the nation this year. Had some losses at the end. Toledo now, conversely, Toledo won coming in, you know, because they were in that tie for second place in the conference standings to get in the conference championship game and just missed out on the tiebreaker. But they were hot right there at the very end.
Yeah, and they got a football coach, certainly, Doug, that it is a really good one, obviously taking a job from the great season that he had. Now, let me ask you this, partner. I'm sure you don't have any issues getting a team down here to Palm Beach County in December of you know, December 23rd and freezing cold everywhere else but down here in South Florida.
You know, it's like our boss has said, if there was enough stadiums in Boca, we could fill them all with football teams that want to be down here. They want to play down here. It's like I was talking to Theo earlier, and, you know, he was like, what's the draw? And I said, well, first of all, you know, I'm selling, you know, the beaches, great weather,
beans,
sunshine, palm trees, beans.
Yes.
But the real draw, I mean, we were just talking about it. How many NFL kids from here have gone to Louisville and on? It's the student athletes. It's the high school players down here. It's the prospective student athletes for these guys. They want to be down here. They want to be around them. They're going to invite their coaches to come out to practice. They'll bring somebody with them, that kind of thing. So there's a lot of excitement about getting down here because this is seen as one of the recruiting hotbeds. This is a place they want to come. They want to be in front of these kids, and hopefully they're going to take some back home with them.
And on top of that, you mentioned a little bit about the actual schedule of the game itself. The 23rd of December, it's a little separated from school time, right, because it's near the holidays, so therefore it's easier to travel as a family. That probably was the biggest forefront in the mind, not only with the date, but now you see which schools are going to be here, Toledo, Ohio, and you got Louisville, Kentucky. You think you're excited to see those fans come down to South Florida because you make an argument that it's a destination type of bowl game. Tell me a little bit about getting the actual fan bases from their respective schools down to Florida.
Well, first of all, you know who our biggest competition is, don't you? Our own doggone network. They make it easy for you to stay at home, kick up your feet in your own living room, drink your own beer, eat your own popcorn, your own pizza, and watch the game. So we got to make it a little bit better than that. Of course, just the sizzle of coming here. I mean, you know, I don't want to run down any other bowl games, particularly
right,
some of
right.
ours. But what other place would you want to come but South Florida? What a great place to come. Our weather's going to be great and everything. You know, the everything's still green. It's, you know, it's just the place to be. So Toledo has traveled, as from all the MAC teams we've had, Toledo traveled really well twice.
Good.
Louisville has a reputation for traveling well. So I think we've got to match up that, and I'm being on the 23rd, so they can either, and 2 o'clock game even, they can either fly out that night, fly out the next morning, be home in time for Christmas.
Now, Doug, what year number is this for you?
12.
Oh, wow. So with that, what's your favorite part of the process?
Oh, when the kids get here. When we do airport arrivals at PBI, you know, we go out on the tarmac, we have a band that's playing songs, you know, a high school band from here. And when those kids come off the plane, I'll never forget one team, they were all bundled up. They had left like 20-degree weather, and it was like ice storm when they flew out. They get down here, they land, they get off that plane, man, they start shucking off parkas and all that. Had a dance party on the tarmac. They were so happy to be here. So I love that part of it. Love to see them here. But, you know, and then the game itself. So.
And right now, last thing I'll ask you here, Doug Mosley joining us, the executive director of the Bush's Boca Raton Bowl of Beans. You got your new title sponsor. Last time we talked to you was the announcement of Bush's Baked Beans joining the into the action. Tell us a little bit, a couple weeks removed, now that they've sort of settled in as the title sponsor of this great event, what can Mike and I expect on the game day environment in terms of what we're going to see with Bush's Boca Raton Bowl of Beans? Who's going to be out there? What type of things can we expect?
We know we're going to be dunked in some beans.
In some capacity,
we're going to be dunked in beans.
Well, you know, so. I can't give you all my secrets in one interview. You know, I got to space this
not,
out.
Of course.
So I'm going to promise you this. Next week, I'm going to have a full range of the promotions that Bush's is doing. They have been fantastic to work with. Their agency is very creative. The brand manager, Amy Boland, is really a lot of fun. She's the one that hooked me up with the cans here in the backpack.
Once again.
So we'll be coming back to you with that. But let me tell you, it's not going to be just your ordinary bowl game, obviously. It's a bowl of beans.
And weirdly, pardon off, everybody thinks I'm crazy for it. I never heard of Bush's.
Yeah, you're an idiot. I never heard of the
Bush's baked beans until this event. This is why they get the title sponsor of the actual bowl game. So guys like me now, if next time I see Bush's baked beans. Go ahead.
Did you grow up in a barn?
I don't know. Like, whenever I'm at I told Doug, you ever been to a barbecue? I'm like, yeah, I've been to a barbecue, but I don't ask the brand of the big beans in the bowl.
How the hell have you been, kid?
I don't do that.
Now you got your name on a can.
My name on a can. Doug, we appreciate it. Toledo and Louisville are going to be the highlights of what to expect from this year's Bush's Boca Raton Bowl of Beans coming up December 23rd, Tuesday, at Flagler Credit Union Stadium down in Boca. Doug, we appreciate it. Looking forward to talking again soon, all right? That's Doug
Good
Mosley.
Good to see y'all.
That's Mike Rizzo. Colin Russo, Russo and Rizzo. Taking the time out of here. We'll game plan for greatness next on ESPN 106.3. Here and there, but please trust and believe, little mama.
I see you gonna ride for me, so I'm gonna die for you. Is you with me? Let's get back to the Anajar and Levine Accident Attorney Studios. This is Russo and Rizzo on ESPN 106.3.
Colin Russo and Mike Rizzo live here at the Marriott in downtown West Palm Beach. Big thanks to Doug Mosley for joining the program there, the executive director of the Bush's Boca Raton Bowl of Beans. We got you up until 7 p.m. today. We're going to hear from the three Lou Groza Award finalists who are live on site here at the Marriott, going to be honored at this great event tonight. You got Aiden Burr from Georgia Tech. You got Kensei Matsuyawa from Hawaii, who beat Stanford in that first game of the year. I remember that very, very well. And then you got Tate Sandell from Oklahoma. We'll talk to all of them. Stay tuned for that.
Hang on. Coach Salem.
Coach Tim Salem, special teams coordinator.
Christian, he came bearing gifts. I got a Georgia Tech lanyard out of it.
Oh.
He's buying votes.
bought my vote.
He
bought me a pin, and he got me a lanyard. Coach Salem has my vote.
We talk to Tate, and Tate's got me an Oklahoma hoodie with the Jordan logo, I'd be a happy camper. Nonetheless, that's Mike Rizzo and Colin Russo. Let's game plan for greatness. We've got Monday Night Football tonight. Let's get to it. Presented by Men's Only Medical.
Men, games aren't won on Friday night. They're won Monday through Thursday.
You find out life's a game of inches.
It's about preparation. It's about discipline. And it's about showing up ready to dominate.
That's going to make the difference between winning and losing.
And now, your game plan for greatness. Brought to you by Men's Only Medical. Visit mensonlymedical.com.
Clear eyes, full hearts.
Let's go play some football. Let's go,
folks. That's Men's Only Medical, 2400 South Dixie Highway. Go see Doc Al. Go see my guy, Concierge Healthcare Service. Go see if it's right for you. The one-stop shop men's health clinic here in West Palm Beach. Well, game plan for greatness, where we come up with a game plan for the Monday night teams that are playing on Monday Night Football. Now, Colin, you could have the cheating khaki pants, Jim Harbaugh. I am going to take the Eagles. And it is important that that Eagle offense gets back on track. Get that ball going with the Saquon Barkley run game. And, I mean, geez, can we get A.J. Brown the ball? Can we get Devontae Smith the ball? And it's funny because we talked about it on the show. I say, can we get these guys the ball? When they get the ball, they don't win. It's time for them to put it together offensively. Kevin Petullo, offensive coordinator for the Eagles, his house is getting egged. I mean, these fans are crazy in Philadelphia. They got to get the offense back on track. And tell us a little bit about the Chargers, Kyle, on Monday Night Football.
Yeah, Chargers are another part. It's been a team that's been littered with injuries, especially on their front offensive line. They have talent, especially offensively, just with their skill positions and their quarterback. But keeping that healthy, Herbert, don't turn the game into a 100 difficulty level for Herbert tonight. And that means you got to protect him a little bit. That offensive line is going to come after Herbert early and often. They're going to try to make him uncomfortable throughout this game. This is an important game for the Chargers because they don't want to be one of those teams that sort of reels at the end of the year. And they have a tough schedule. They're going to have to steal one of these big games eventually. They got Houston hot on their trail. They got all these teams that they're going to have to worry about, including they still have that tough division that they're playing, and they still got to play Denver again. So if you're the Chargers, it's been the same thing for 3 years. Protect Justin Herbert and take the load off of him considerably. If you're able to do that, then we'll be looking at a game where I could see both sides being very competitive.
Yep, and once again, this is Game Plan for Greatness brought to you by our great friends over at Men's Only Medical. Go get your health game plan from my buddy Doc Al at Men's Only Medical. You visit them, mensonlymedical.com. Kyle, where do you put the Eagles in the NFC right now? Where are you rating the Eagles? I'd probably go Rams, probably go Seahawks, and then we could have a conversation. I think those two teams, for me, are clear right now of Philadelphia, what's going on, but never sleep on a Super Bowl champion.
Yeah, I would say that. I would say the Packers are in that argument as well. But here's the thing. You know, the Packers, I mean, they're playing well right now. The Eagles had a two-game losing streak. They've done this before. They had a two-game losing streak. You know, when they lost to the Giants and they lost to the Broncos back-to-back, the midpoint of the year, what did they do after that? They followed up with some impressive wins. I actually anticipate that tonight. I anticipate the Eagles to get back on track because they know if they stack a loss, it's fine. But, I mean, I don't see this being a really out-of-hand type of losing streak at this point in the season. I think they got too much experience, too much of a winner's mentality, and I do think they'll be okay.
Who needs the game more? Eagles or Chargers?
I would say the Eagles.
Eagles.
You know, I don't even think it's because the Chargers have more competition in the actual division. The Eagles don't necessarily as much, especially after Dallas lost to Detroit on Thursday Night Football. But I would say that the Eagles are thinking about, we need to put ourselves in the best position to be trending in the right direction once postseason play starts. You want at least a home game or two, and you want to making sure you're playing your best football right now. In my opinion, that includes a couple of things. You mentioned getting the ball to the receivers, absolutely, but I think they worry too much about that. I think getting the running game going and getting Saquon Barkley going makes everything easier for everybody else. You know that Saquon Barkley can kind of withstand a 100 to 150 yard load, and if he is playing well, that offense will play well. It is not going to be a pass-first offense. It is never going to be a pass-first offense. It is important to get the running game going. It is important to get the run game consistent. It's important to get Saquon Barkley.
I just think there's a spoil riches on that offense. And for them to have the issues that they are, listen, egging a coach's house is absolutely ridiculous. But that's how crazy these fans are. It's like with the weapons you got on offense, you're going to have to figure it out. I don't condone egging houses, but certainly – Philly fan is one of them.
I think he'll call a good game because they got his ass hanged. I see you're not seeing the bright
it's
side.
It's a bad look.
You're not seeing the bright side.
Dude, I cannot believe you're taking side of Philly fan.
I'm not
you're
taking side usually, of Philly fan.
Yes, you are.
I'm you're not taking side of Philly fan.
You're basically saying Philly fan did this on purpose to get Kevin
Petula. Yeah, they did it on purpose. Why do you think they did it on purpose?
To get Kevin Petula. They did it on purpose to get this guy to kick it in gear. No, they did this because they're idiots. That's why they did it. With all due respect to Philly fan.
And when he calls an excellent game tonight, who do you think will be laughing? We're all happy.
Why are you egging somebody's house? This
I
isn't
agree.
A.
You should go nowhere near a person.
Christian,
home.
This isn't you know, freshman year of high school where you all right, come on, you're grown men egging an offensive coordinator's house. Grow up.
I just one thing I'll say. The wrong way to do it, wrong execution, wrong plan. Yes. Right thought process. I can't say I disagree. You had to get him to hear it eventually. He's not going to hear it from the reporters.
Oh, they hear him when they're chanting fire Petula in the third quarter.
Petula's not listening to WIP, listening to all the criticisms.
When they're chanting fire Petula in the third quarter, I think he hears it. Am I wrong on that?
The one thing about Eagle fans, you got to give them a little credit for, is they know what they're talking about, at the very least. They're on top of the team. Now, they're nuts.
They're delusional and nuts.
Delusional. You know what you're dealing with right now? You're dealing with your first case of that's what an Ohio State fan base looks like, but you're Ohio State, so you don't see it. So now you're seeing it because that's what the Eagles are.
What do you mean, dude? I just told you. I got humbled over the weekend.
I'm scared for the playoff, mate.
Ohio
State fans are like Eagle fans. They're like Eagle fans. It's the same thing. It's the same thing.
No, dude.
Yes, it is. It's the same thing. Now you're just seeing it. Now you're seeing what you look like to everybody else.
Dude, we're not running around championship
what they do
with
what they hold on
out.
What they do after Ryan Day lost to Michigan last year, what they do,
granted they went after Coach Day, I don't condone that, but we're not running around the championship parade with our willie out. All right, that's not
yeah,
you know what I mean
fans are
come
a little
on
more trashy.
They're weird, they're a weird bunch.
That's one person. I understand. Point being, that high level team fan that is nuts and annoying and obnoxious,
by the way.
Pot's calling the kettle black.
Game plan for greatness brought to you by Mentally Medical. We appreciate Doc Al over on Dixie Highway.
Yeah, I'd like to see the Eagles win tonight because I think the NFL is better when the Eagles are playing well. I don't think this needs to be a two-division NFC. I think it needs to be a three-division NFC, and therefore I want the Eagles to be playing well because the NFC South is in complete shambles. You know, that's the Panthers' takes. Keep that in mind. And on top of that, the NFC West is great and the NFC North is great. But the NFC East, I mean, the Giants haven't done anything special, and the Washington Commanders have been a mess.
And,
of themselves, true mess on top of that. I mean, they didn't even show up in the game yesterday against Minnesota. We haven't even talked about that yet. And Dallas, Dallas is doing exactly what Dallas is going to do. They're going to be first or second team out in the NFC playoff picture, but they're going to show a lot of highs, but they're clearly
a flawed bunch. They needed a win against Detroit.
They're clearly a flawed bunch. So you're going to have to keep an eye on that. But I actually think the Eagles are going to play well tonight. I think they're going to call a good game tonight. I think the offense is going to play pretty well tonight. And I'm actually looking forward to seeing if Kevin Petullo calls a little bit of a masterclass.
After having to clean off some eggs from his house. Now, Colin, our interns did something different today with our Duffy's social media video. Go to @ESPN West Palm. They asked us Super Bowl favorites. Who's your Super Bowl favorite? You want to know what I said? Christian will hate this. I took the high road. I said, I don't have one because it's wide open. And it speaks to how good the NFL has been this year. I have no idea who's going to win the Super Bowl, and I think it's amazing.
At their best, I think the Rams are the most dangerous team. But yeah,
but you get what I'm saying. That's why you could take it as a cop out, but I'm truly that's how I feel.
Go get started at Vitacost Sports Certified Marketplace. If you're an athlete, if you're just somebody who wants to get in better shape, you got to understand that just showing up to the gym and doing it every single day, it's about 20% of the actual work. The other 80% is how you fuel your body, what you put into your body, because you don't get out what you put in. You get out what you put in, and that's truly what happens with your nutrition and your supplements. And Vitacost Sports Certified Marketplace, it's built for athletes, fitness enthusiasts, people who like to train hard but understand what the benefits of clean supplementation and nutrition can do for you. Whether you're prepping for a triathlon, grinding at the gym, just trying to be a little bit more health conscious, Vitacost is your go-to for leveling up your game. Their Sports Overdrive Marketplace has over 400 performance-enhancing supplements that are all certified, which means that there's free of banned substances. There are no funny business going on. They all help you level up your game. Visit Vitacost.com/sport-certified to make your purchase today. Use code ESPN20, that's ESPN20, for 20%
now,
off.
Level up
your game at Vitacost.
Is your vote going to get bought like how mine was bought by Coach Salem?
Absolutely
at Georgia
not. Tech? Talk to each of these kickers, and we're going to find out who I believe is going to be the Luke Rosa Award winner. That's Mike Rizzo, Colin Russo, Russo and Rizzo, ESPN 106.3.